Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, September 28th, 2023. Hey, Dave. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Melody.
Hey, Dave.
Hi, Melody.
Hey, Dave.
Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, I can.
Hey.
Just
hey,
giving you a hard time there.
Well, happy National Drink Beer Day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but of course, every day they say is Drink Beer Day, right?
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Hey. But more importantly, it's National Good Neighbor Day.
Oh.
Certainly a blessing to have a good neighbor, but it's even greater to be a good neighbor.
Mm.
And good neighbors often become friends, as you well know, and they watch out for each other, lend a helping hand, are there for advice, host dinner parties, offer a cup of sugar when we're out of stock, collect our mail when we're on vacation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Simply put, being a good neighbor makes good neighbors and leads to lifelong friendships.
I'm a great neighbor.
You are.
I don't bug any of my neighbors.
Is the opposite
I'm
true?
Just the I'm just the opposite.
But do any of your neighbors bug you?
Absolutely. One just put out a huge, because I'm used to living on larger properties and put out this huge birdhouse. I'm thinking, I like birds, you know. But all I'm thinking of is now those birds are going to come and you know what on my fence.
So, what, chirp? They're going to chirp on your fence.
Yes. And while they're chirping, they're also doing something else.
No, they're not going to do what one did to me yesterday while I was walking my dog.
Dude.
It kind of meshed in with my white hair, but
Ooh. Still
it was the thought. The thought that counts.
May the bluebird of happiness. Anyway, let's go ahead and get to see the gold bird of happiness.
Yeah.
We had a lot of pressure in gold, and hey folks, it's some scoop it up. Forget what the price is gonna be today, tomorrow, next year, or 3 years from now. Just get it. Because it's not going anywhere. We're having a pullback, but you know what? Hey, it's a great buying opportunity. And it did come back a little bit, 1866. Today you have silver up 9 cents at 22.71. And platinum was up 21 at 917. Palladium was up 50 at 1304. And that is due to the USDX. It was actually down 4.9. So I would kind of expect maybe to see gold higher tomorrow from where we are today with that dollar being down 0.49 unless it reverses itself. Crude oil, I believe the futures contracts hit 95 today. We're looking at 91.75 in the trading markets today. And let's go ahead and see the paper markets. They also had a better day today. The Dow was up 116. The S&P was up 25. And the NASDAQ was up 108. And European markets were positive. Asian markets, they were mixed. China was stronger just by 3 points. This is what's amazing. You had the 10-year Treasury hit a 15-year high. Did come back a little bit, 4.577.
Yeah.
So.
Reached the 4.6 mark earlier this morning.
Yep. And that's healthy, isn't it? Natural gas, 2.94, up almost 1.5%. So I think I got all the numbers there today. I'm not sure. And the COMEX gold is even lower, 1883. So that also took a beating in the last couple of days. So, we're talking about the bond market. I don't know how the bond market moves suggests stronger growth ahead. I mean, to me, it's just the opposite. But there's a guy out there, Axios. He says that the bond market's notable moves this month imply a stronger economic growth. Treasury bond prices have abruptly moved to levels. And that do imply the high-pressure economy of the last couple of years is going to persist. The rise in interest rates in May, which accelerated this month, has been driven by higher real yields. So is the bond market not pricing in higher inflation, but rather a persistently hot economy? Financial markets, based on their current pricing, at least believe that the secular stagnationary, the 2010s, is finished. Well, this guy's from Axios, so yeah, I can see him thinking this, Dave. And, when you read what the commercial real estate and banks with longer-term securities on their balance sheets and all of these guys are going to lose.
Yeah, and it's also bad news for the federal government and it's a seriously dysfunctional fiscal situation on many fronts with large and growing deficits forecast for as far as the eye can see. That with higher interest rates are going to be a lot more expensive to finance from year to year. The yield on the 5-year inflation protected treasuries reached almost 2.5% this morning, 2.47. Again, another 15-year high. It was just 1.07% in April. Actually, it was in negative territory as recently as mid last year. 10-year treasury yield again reached 4.64 today for falling back a little bit. And mortgage rates hitting new multi-decade highs, 30-year fixed reaching over 7.6 yesterday. Well, this economic data over the last few months has been, this article says solid and largely consistent with forecasts. I see a lot of mixed signals. I know you do too, Melody. And the word solid just seems to be so misplaced in this case, too. Irwin says it's not like there's been something in the growth or inflation numbers that would trigger a radical rethinking of the medium-term outlook. Goes on to say the most recent rate surge trigger was new forecasts from the Fed after its meeting last week, suggesting, again, it will keep its target which is probably going to go up another 0.25% by the end of the year, higher next year than it previously had been talking about. Yet Irwin concludes it's not the kind of adjustment that would explain the scale of long-term rate moves since then.
Yeah,
maybe,
I mean...
the Fed's Austin Goolsbee knows more, Melody.
Well, I'm not so sure about that, but he did say for the Institute for International Economics that the Fed's new forecast is a subtle difference, and long rates are moving quite a bit. He asks, is there some strange thing going on in the marketplace, some liquidity issues? Yeah, I think there's a lot of liquidity issues, but he said long rates heavily influence economic decisions, and if that continues, we'll have to take that into account as a form of financial conditions and monetary tightening. He also offered a charming anecdote during his talks that helps us understand why it won't necessarily take a recession to bring inflation down. He said, I don't know why he's talking about Grandpa Jack lived on a ranch outside of Abilene, Texas, that served in World War II, and was one of the greatest generational wise men. So I'm not quite sure what that is all about, but that is what he said.
Well, he said Grandpa offered advice when the young Chicago Fed chief was starting his career. He says, he told me, this is your first job and you'll need to save money. So let me tell you something very important. Never buy stocks. Your grandmother and I had friends who bought stocks. They lost everything when the market crashed. Goolsbee recalls Grandpa Jack saying he was talking about the Great Depression, one historic event that scarred his thinking for over 65 years and evidently led him to miss out on a few thousand percent cumulative return. So what's the moral of this story? Well, Neil Irwin says when an event is one of a kind, it isn't terribly helpful to use historical experiences and rules of thumb. Like my grandpa's investments tips, let's be prepared to recognize when historical lessons might not work that well for today's environment.
Well, you know what? You know I'm going to disagree with that because I do believe historical lessons are very important. Because it's those historical lessons that show us where this all leads. And it might not play out day by day and you know, tit for tat, but history does repeat itself, and that's a fact, and it has. So to say to ignore history and that it might not work, I truly disagree with that. And today's environment... The difference in today's environment, and maybe this is what he's alluding to, is, yeah, the Federal Reserve and along with the central banks and along with Wall Street and every brokerage house in the world, yeah, they do have a whole a lot more power. And they're also dealing with the fiat currency that allows them to do things that they hadn't been able to do because they were... Really, they were held accountable in so many ways. Not to say there wasn't any corruption then, but at least, you know, there was with gold and silver, there was accountability. So, yeah, it is a different climate. It is a different environment. But that doesn't mean the outcome is different. So that's the history lesson that people have to pay attention to. You are going to lose a lot. You might not lose everything, but... Well, if they default, I mean, as treasury yields rise, the value of those treasuries go down. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on that, you know, we try to bring it to these programs. We have an hour, so we're kind of limited what we try to bring you and so forth. But there's so much, so much. And the more they come out and say it's going to be a soft landing, to me, it just tells me more and more just how hard that landing is going to be. So, you know, we have another billionaire today, Ray Dalio. He says he's been keeping a close eye on what he calls the nation's risky financial situation. He's the founder of the hedge fund Bridgewater. He says, we're going to have a debt crisis in this country. Well, we've been saying it for how many years? Wake up. He was at a managed funds association meeting, I guess. And he says how fast it transpires, he thinks, is going to be a function of that supply-demand issue. He says gross U.S. government debt levels surpassed $33 trillion for the first time this month. You know, and you know, you have these lawmakers that are trying to negotiate a spending bill before the September 30th deadline. A failure to reach an agreement would mean a government shutdown and raise investors' perceived risk of the country's debt. The U.S. debt levels have ballooned in recent years. No, ladies and gentlemen, the U.S. debt levels have been ballooning for a lot longer than the last couple of years. And, but yeah, the last couple of years since the COVID, they've just really added to it. Investors fear interest rates may keep rising as the fiscal situation worsens, hurting the demand for treasuries and further increasing the yields. Yeah, those yields have to go up as those values drop. Dalio is concerned that there are more headwinds for the economy than just high debt levels, saying growth could fall to zero, give or take 1% or 2% maybe. He says, I think you're going to get a meaningful slowing of the economy. So here we come, Dave.
Yeah.
And I guess you're going to have a multi-part series on deficits and debt beginning on Monday's American Survival newsletter.
Yep.
Yep. Good.
Be on the lookout. We'll do it in the newsletter and Friday Super. Blogs. Keep some continuity in there.
Awesome. Yeah, we still have time. Jobless claims today. We've seen those inch up just modestly this week. Still the low levels in 8 months from the previous week. The latest levels come as the labor market seems to defy all of these rate increase. Filings for initial jobless claims rose by 2,000 to 204,000 for the week ending September 23rd. And the week before was 202,000. So the four-week moving average of claims, which quiets some of the week-to-week volatility, fell to 6,200. And anything else in that report, Dave?
Let me just look real quickly. No. The rest of it pretty much rehashes what we talk about almost every day or every other day on the program. So, no, that caught the bulk of it.
Well, the Commerce Department today confirmed that our economy grew at a 2.1% annual pace in the second quarter. We're still back in the second quarter. And the second quarter expansion of the nation's GDP marked just a modest deceleration from the economy's 2.2 annual growth in the first quarter. Let's see. Fed, you know, we've known that the Fed raises its benchmark 11 times since March of last year, Dave.
Well, we know now that higher rates have taken some limited toll on different parts of the economy. For one, consumer spending, which counts again for 70% of GDP, rose at an annual rate of just 0.8% in the second quarter. That's down more than 50% from the government's previous estimate of 1.7, and the weakest since the first quarter of last year. But the closely watched business investment, excluding housing anyway, that rose at a 7.5% annual pace. That's the fastest in more than a year. Plus, state and local government spending and investment jumped at 4.7, the highest quarterly gain since 2019. Still, most mainstream economists are projecting more modest third and fourth quarter growth for the most part, except the Atlanta Fed, one major exception. Their GDP Now tool sees third quarter GDP growth at a whopping 4.9%. defies credibility. And I'll eat my words if that's the case. We shall see in a few weeks.
That's so funny. 4.9%. I'd quit my job if it actually came in at 4.9. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, 1-800-375-4188 for Discount Gold and Silver Trading. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And, of course, make sure you sign up for our newsletter so you'll get Dave's report on the deficits coming out this week or the first of next week. So dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And folks, you know, I've been hearing people, I'm going to do this real quick, Dave. And people are talking about, oh, bars. It's like, you know what? Between a bar and a 1 ounce round, you're looking at a nickel.
Really?
That's it.
Wow.
So why in the world would you buy a bar? A 1 ounce round that comes in a tube of 20, easily to store, they're stacked for a nickel. Why would anybody push bars? 100 ounce bars.
It's Senator Menendez seems to like them.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking silver right now. This is silver bars. And that was in a comparison with a 100 ounce bar. I'm sorry. That was a 100 ounce bar. You save a nickel.
Jeez.
A nickel. 10-ounce bars, you save 15 cents. Why would you want a 100-ounce bar? The only thing a good 100-ounce bar is good for is a doorstop. You know? But why do they do that? Because they make more money. They make more money on what they're selling, or they have the product and they need to get rid of it. I mean, come on. I saw somebody selling 1 ounce rounds online, one of the big brokers online, $29. $29. Ours are $25. These are rounds, for heaven's sakes. If they're selling rounds at that price, what are they selling their Silver Eagles for? It's crazy. And they're also pushing, again, storage in these various Brinks vaults, but you go through us and we'll store it there. And I mean, come on, folks. I just can't believe the stuff I hear. So give us a call. If you hear this stuff, let me know, because then I can share it. And it never ceases to amaze me what I do hear. So give me a, you know, cease to amaze me. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I don't buy this either. I don't know what this is. Supposedly, Americans are going to spend more this holiday season. They're going to start earlier. I think they're going to start earlier. There's no way they're going to spend more this season. And that probably trying to maybe try to get that GDP up a little bit, I guess. I don't know. But there's no way. There's no way. Not with the numbers and what people are really experiencing when they go to the grocery store and everything. This year, it also marks the resumption of student loan payments. Of course, when households are already struggling to make high ends meet amid high inflation and these higher interest rates, millions of borrowers face their first student loan bill in more than 3 years. October is expected to be a particularly big month for holiday shopping as well, with consumers planning to start earlier and spend more than before. So I don't get it. If the people have millions of borrowers have to start paying their bills on their student loan, how can they spend more on Christmas?
When they've drawn down their savings.
Exactly. And they're using credit. They're maxing out their credit cards and using their credit cards for food. For food. And other living expenses. Nick Handrinos, a vice chair of Deloitte, says when competing forces create a battle for consumer spending, this year half of shoppers plan to begin their holiday shopping by Halloween. I think they already always do that. I don't think that's new. There's a separate study by Retail Me Not found that more shoppers are starting even earlier, with as many as 2/3 kicking off the season earlier in October. With more shoppers getting an early start in the season, holiday retail sales are likely to increase between 3.5 to 4.6 in 2023. So they're actually just thinking, because people are starting earlier, that that's what's going to give them the extra boost and getting more growth.
Yeah, I'd like to see the details of this study. It just it's so counterintuitive.
I'd like to see why. Or what is the reason that people are starting earlier? It's not that because they have that much money and, you know, they want to buy extra stuff. I think they're buying early because they're strapped.
I know I'm starting earlier this year because I've waited till the last minute the past 10 years. And just don't end up finding the gifts that my family have asked for. So so I have another reason for that. But I can tell you that our budget for Christmas shopping this year is significantly less than what it was just last year. And we're just real skeptical of what lies in front of us
coming
next year.
Exactly.
And I think... listeners would be wise to consider the same thing.
But So that is interesting, Dave, about their predictions. And yes, they do have to come up with these jolly reports prior to the season, because they really, you know, they can't say, oh, gee, it was bad retail, unless something really bad happens. But I know this, you know, so.
It's very interesting. I mean, to some degree, the National Retail Federation is a little more honest than certainly this Deloitte report seems to be suggesting. I mean, they do see spending growth slowing as the economy settles down, but they still think shoppers are buying more this year than last. Their CEO and President Matt Shea said, going forward, we expect moderate growth to continue despite uncertainties like inflation and interest rates, et cetera, et cetera. Their chief economist, Jack Kleinhans, added, households have the capacity to spend. They do. You know, I guess to some extent, I mean, we can't forget about the significant wage increases over the past year and a half. That still, in many cases, have not been as high as inflation. So their real wage growth is stunted, if positive at all. But he says momentum slowing, in part because savings built up during the pandemic are running lower and credit costs are rising. Look at your statements every month, ladies and gentlemen. You see that average interest rate now almost 22%. If you don't pay it all off at the end of the month or by bill due time, that's what you're getting charged on your unpaid balance. 21%. That means you don't pay anything for 5 months. Actually, be less than that, the compounding effect. I mean, 5 months max, you've doubled yeah. what you owe.
Yeah. Wow. That's putting it in perspective. And you know what, too? And, you know, they talk about, you know, that we're at near full employment. Well, let's take a look at that employment. You know, just because we're at near full employment doesn't mean that people have the extra money to spend. You know, I think that we're near full employment because the prices and our living expenses are so much higher, from electric to gas to this to that. And we're heading into the winter season. So that, you know, if things were really good, then I would say, yeah, okay, maybe near full employment. But how many people have more than two jobs, too? I mean, people have been carrying two jobs for a long time.
And remember, when these mainstreamers talk about full employment, they're talking about it relative to headline unemployment, which is right now around 3.8%. Seems really low, doesn't it? But you include discouraged job seekers, that is those who want a full-time job but have been so discouraged with the market they've stopped looking for, I think, more than 6 months. Plus, there are those who want to work full-time who can only find part-time jobs. That's 7.1%. That's not full employment. That's not maximum employment. You know, we're constantly being misled. It just gives people the wrong idea, and it lets a lot of people off the hook. And we could spend a whole program talking about this, but you know, I think at least roughly half of borrowers are worried that the end of the student loan payment pause will negatively affect their lives. Bill Hensley, who's another CEO, says one in four of all adults will be reducing their spending in other areas. That means those who are going to start repaying their student loans. And that's a shift in consumer spending that could be felt all across the country.
You know, I think also what if we did experience something, it could also be that, hey, sometimes if you think that something's going to happen, maybe in January or February, people just go out and say, I'm just going to blow it all.
Jump off a cliff?
Yeah, just blow it all. Just let's have a really, let's not worry about it. Let's just go out and enjoy it. This before it all comes home to roost. And we saw something like that heading into Y2K. People just kind of, this is going to happen. So I'm just going to go out and have a ball. I'm just going to go out and we're going to have a great time. And people went deeper and deeper into debt. And there's one thing, whenever the government defaults, I don't think it's going to be this time, but when they eventually do, what do you think people are going to do? Well, government can default in the debt, so am I. Why do I have to pay it back? I mean, that's going to be, it's going to be nasty. And, and it's true. I mean, I get this. You and I differ a little bit. You know, we have these CEOs that, of course, they earn more today than they did in the mid-90s and the 60s and the 70s. And they earn more than, the employees, than the typical worker. And, a lot of these typical workers, they rely on their heavily stock-related compensation. Rising CEO pay doesn't necessarily reflect a rising value of skills or contribution to the firm's productivity. What's changed over the years is CEOs' use of their power to set their own pay, kind of like our politicians. They get to set their own pay, their own term limits, their own benefits. And how can anything go on like this for an indefinitely, you ask me? But this will come home to roost. This will correct itself on its own because it can't function properly when you have the upset like this. It just won't. So we saw the CEO compensation grew roughly 28% faster than stock market growth during from 78 to 2022. And in this period, it far eclipsed the slower 15% growth in a typical worker's annual compensation, Dave.
Yeah, well, the number that really, I think, stands out is that the CEO to worker compensation ratio reached 344-1 last year. That means the average CEO earned 344 times the typical worker compensation. And that stands in contrast to the 21-1 ratio roughly 60 years ago in the mid-60s. More importantly, over the last 20 years, this ratio has been far higher than at any point in the 60s, 70s, 80s, or at least early 90s. So over the last three decades, compensation grew far faster for CEOs than it did for the top 0.1% of wage earners. That is, those earning more than 99.9% of wage earners. CEO compensation at the end of 2021 was almost eight times as high as the wages of the top 0.1%. that's stark to me. We talk about equality and inequality. Compensation just proves again that it's good to be king or queen, Melody.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't trickle down. Never will. A lot of the answers that they have that they want to change ain't going to work. Strikes aren't going to work. Some of the things that the UAW is calling for, it's like, are you kidding me? I mean, I don't get it. I just, I don't know, when I was working for the banks and the insurance companies, I never even thought about what the CEOs made. I took a job based on what they were paying me, and I was happy for it. I made that decision. I didn't request to have baby leave for 6 months and a four-day work week in order for them to hire me and to keep me as an employee.
Well, that's true. But when you find out that your CEO is making over 300 times what you make now, as opposed to what it was back then.
It was none of my business back then.
We do see that.
And the thing of it is, I hear the music. We have to take a break, so we'll be back. Stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one last time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of client business this final segment. She's at 1-800-375-4188. Yes, the rate of inflation has come down a lot over the last year, but Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal writes in his blog today, there's a lot of debate about why. He observes that because the headline unemployment rate has remained low, we don't have clear evidence about rate hikes slowing the economy, raising the unemployment rate, dampening consumer demand, and causing price growth to slow. That's not to say there's been no effect from the Fed, he points out, but it is a bit muddled, to use his words. One area we've talked about in this program a lot is the degree to which there are lags in the impact of Fed monetary policy. For a long time, a lot of experts have said that rate hikes work with long and variable lags, but there's another view that these days the lags are shorter or non-existent. That thinking is that the Fed has been clear in its forward guidance, and so markets can reprice the new rate path almost right away as policy changes or as new data affect the expected policy trajectory. There are some apparent immediate aspects of monetary policy transmission, to use Wiesenthal's word. An unexpected hike or an unexpected hawkish turn would likely show up in interest rates in the stock market right away. So he asks, what's the case for long lags? Well, on today's episode of Wiesenthal's Odd Lots podcast, he spoke with Julia Coronado, founder, CEO, and president of Macro Policy Perspectives. She's in the long lags camp. And basically, her argument is that monetary policy transmission works through two distinct channels, capital markets and credit. Capital markets, it's fast. Markets reprice fast. Credit, she says, is different. There's plenty of room for wiggle room in, for example, commercial real estate. Coronado says there's the credit channel side where you've got this fixed rate financing for a couple of years, and you've got time, and there's legitimate uncertainty about where we're going to be in a year or two. Commercial real estate, she continues, is a perfect example because they're a glass half full kind of people. She talks to a lot of people in the real estate industry who say there's a real sense that if we hold on long enough, rates will come back down. In other words, Wiesenthal argues, higher rates don't force some immediate change. You can actually hold out some hope. You can, in low times of low rates, term out debt and wait, see how things develop. You can just be a blind optimist, in his words. From Coronado's perspective, however, one risk is that the Fed sees an economy that's still too hot and is still in tightening mode, even before the impact from their 11 previous hikes start to kick in fully. And that's the crux of the Goldilocks soft landing goal versus the potential longer-term reality of a broad and possibly deep recession. So look, don't let the uncertainty paralyze you. Regardless of whether the prices of gold and silver are up or down on any given day, just add more to your portfolio before their prices inevitably surge again. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading for all your precious metal needs at 1-800-375-4188. We've been providing long-term financial security for over 25 years. Well, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy criticized the short-term Senate government funding bill today. That's stoking more fears that a shutdown could take place. He says, among other things, the measure would not improve border security. He said, I look at the current Senate bill that does nothing to deal with border security. Don't take my word for it, he added. The governor of Massachusetts declared a state of emergency. This is something that both Democrats and Republicans want to have done. Well, the other day, the Senate introduced a bipartisan bill, one that would keep the government open through, well, November 17th, supposedly giving lawmakers more time to kick the can down the road once more. I mean, more time to reach a deal on a larger budget plan. McCarthy's comments came as lawmakers raced to reach an agreement on a government funding plan for fiscal year 2024 before the deadline this weekend. Deal isn't reached by midnight Saturday, the government would shut down, sending ripples through the economy and capital markets. McCarthy also said he continues to face challenges from his own House members in his own party as negotiations continue. He said, I've got members who have held us up since the summer not to be able to bring our appropriation bills up. Otherwise, we'd have them all done by now. He added, I've got members who will not vote to have a continuing resolution to continue to fund government. I've got members who say they'd never vote for it. Well, however you feel about that, McCarthy said he's hopeful a deal will be reached. At the end of the day, he promised, we will get this done. Okay, so trade won't grind to a halt, but key parts of the machinery that make our country's international commerce tick and that police its rules just might slow down and noticeably. That's what American importers and exporters face if Congress doesn't get this done and there's a shutdown. That's according to an alert this week from the D.C.-based advisory firm Venable. The company pointed to several possibilities based on actions in previous government closures. Customs and border protection will be deemed essential because it's considered law enforcement, and trade processing at ports of entry will continue normally. Import-related services like tariff exclusion request processing and anti-dumping duty and countervailing duty investigations will likely come to a halt. Federal Maritime Commission will also likely suspend most activities. Trade enforcement will certainly continue, but there will be longer waits, or even suspension of, like, reviews of voluntary disclosures at the Office of Foreign Assets Control, license applications, petitions for removal from the specially designated nationals list, and shippers of hazardous materials regulated by the EPA might face significant disruptions, i.e. delays, because that agency has suspended many operations during past shutdowns. You got Venable's policy advisor, Richard DiNucci, who says the overall impact should be minimal on imports. The export community will notice delays in licensing, processing, and reviews, as several agencies will be impacted by varying degrees. Venable International Trade Group co-chair Ashley Craig said a closed federal government, if it happens, would hit shippers just as overall trade volumes are getting soft again. She observed, there's no time that's good for a shutdown, but given global economic conditions, this is the best of the worst conditions. Interesting perspective, Ashley. Hey, a landmark bill that would finally protect banks that work with cannabis companies appears headed to the Senate floor after passing out of committee yesterday. Since marijuana is actually legal in some states, more of them for medical purposes than recreational, but illegal still at the federal level, the industry has long struggled to get to gain access to banking and related financial services. Instead, many business owners are forced, and many of them are smaller business. Some are larger corporations, but by and large, in terms of just numbers, you know, these dispensaries and grow outfits are, you know, small businesses. And they're being forced to deal with the inconveniences and dangers of transacting in all cash and finding secure places to store it all. That's steep costs in many cases. Now, though its path to passage is anything but assured, the bill's advancement is an incremental win for the cannabis industry and certainly the banks that would like to handle all the money it generates. There's fairly broad bipartisan agreement in D.C. that state-sanctioned cannabis companies should have access to the nation's banking system. At yesterday's Senate Banking Committee hearing, Republican Senator Steve Daines of Montana, who's one of the bill's co-sponsors, said the current all-cash model of legal cannabis businesses makes them target for theft, tax evasion, and organized crime. Senate Banking Chair Sherrod Brown of Ohio emphasized the bill would help the industry's workers who face challenges proving their income when trying to rent a home or apply for a mortgage. The issues complicating the bill's passage are a bit outside its narrow scope. I mean, skeptics want to ensure that banks can't turn away other industries that might be deemed controversial, like gun companies or energy companies even. Supporters have concern the bill would reinforce racial and class inequities. That's because the legal cannabis business, which the bill helps, is majority white owned. But look, many more people of color are still arrested for marijuana possession or have criminal records and in prison even
for past cannabis offenses. These conflicting views are going to make it tougher to pass the bill in the Senate, at least according to Cowen analyst Jarrett Seiberg. Still, he thinks this is a tremendous symbolic win for the cannabis sector. Even the American Bankers Association issued a statement supporting the legislation. The bill, called the Secure and Fair Enforcement Regulation Banking Act, or SAFER, passed out of committee by a 14-9 vote with three Republicans in support. Under the bill, banks can't be penalized for providing services to state-sanctioned marijuana businesses. Similar legislation has passed the House 7 times before, but never made it out of a Senate committee, and that was when the House was controlled by Democrats. Welcome to the new normal, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, and one more government shutdown thing to end today's program. As I mentioned, the shutdown could start 12 at 1 a.m. Sunday, and many Congress watchers think it's more likely than not. I still hold out remote hope that a last-minute deal could be achieved, but if a shutdown occurs and it's prolonged, it could and probably would undermine Fed policymakers' ability to measure how the economy is doing in real time. It's an exceptionally delicate time for monetary policy as the Fed weighs whether to keep pushing interest rates higher and tries to guide the economy into a soft landing and avoid that dreaded recession, broad recession. Disruptions in the flow of government data due to a shutdown would make it harder to make the right calls. I mean, monetary policy already uses backward-looking, mostly unreliable gauges. The risk is that the most important metrics, like trends in employment, joblessness, inflation, and economic growth, could be turned off entirely for weeks. And we saw what happened during broad government shutdowns during the pandemic. Because the shutdown would cover the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, the Commerce Department, and the Census Bureau. And those are the agencies that produce a lot of the key data for understanding our economy, including job growth, unemployment, CPI, PCE, and much more. But policymakers, I guess, wouldn't be flying totally blind. Indeed, it would be a big moment for an increasingly varied set of private sector data sources that economists use to complement government reports. In a prolonged shutdown, they would temporarily go from complements to replacements. ADP, the payroll processing services, published data that sheds light on whether private sector employees are adding to their payrolls, much as the government employment data does. That's monthly. The job listings site Indeed and social network LinkedIn published data that track labor market dynamics. It's a useful parallel with data in the government's job openings and labor turnover, the JOLTS series. The Adobe Digital Price Index is a private sector measure of inflation that's modeled after the CPI. Activity indexes from the Institute for Supply Management capture changes in business conditions. Minneapolis Fed Pres Neil Kashkari said earlier this week, if we can't get access to the government data we rely on, we'll supplement that with the best private sector data that we can until that data becomes available again. We live in interesting times. And that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch to close out another week. Also be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the morning. And as Melody mentioned, be on the lookout for our series on deficit and debt beginning next Monday. Thanks always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good night. Bye-bye.